24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It's Thursday the 12th, and I hope you're having a great week and battling through it as us entrepreneurs do. I have a fantastic show for you today. First up, we have Dr. Stephen Mayfield. Started off as a algae PhD researcher, scientist. Someone approached him and discovered that he actually had some commercial tie-in possibilities, and now he is an incredibly successful entrepreneur solving the world's biggest problems. And in particular, he is tackling the microplastics problem, this horrible epidemic that we are having of incredibly small plastics that ending up everywhere in our brains, in our food, causing horrible stomach cancer for young people. And also, there is a blob floating in the Pacific Ocean of microplastics that's larger than Texas. We will talk about that as well. And then we have our favorite Canadian entrepreneur, Wayne Elliott, is back to talk about Strauss and a little bit about the incredible health benefits that that company has had. And he is one of their, not only is he the owner, but he is their number one client, saved his life. On the show tomorrow, Famous Brands Liquor is with us. Maybe you have seen their ads on TV. They are taking over the United States. And a Latin American cloud company all tomorrow. So great stuff then. And then next week, we just keep packing it in. We have the founder of Rev, the number one transcription service out there. We have an incredible sales guru who has done $1.8 billion. And we're going to learn how to sell like a spy. That is really cool. Oh, and the founder of Bigfoot Capital. Wonder why he named it that and what the tie-in there is. Anyway, cram-packed with incredible entrepreneurs for you to copy, borrow, steal from, to learn how to be an incredible entrepreneur in your space. We will be right back to get started. Thanks for being with us.
Bye. School for Startups Radio hopes you will reach out to us if you have any questions or comments, or if you need help with your business at any stage, from concepts to exit. Jim accepts all connections on LinkedIn. He tweets from @EntrepreneurJim, and he responds to emails at james.beach@att.net. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
We are back and still very appreciative that you are with us today. I'm very excited to introduce another great entrepreneur. This is one of those times where I feel like we're going to make me look really stupid because of all the stuff that it's going to be evident that I don't know. Please welcome Stephen Mayfield, Dr. Stephen Mayfield, to the show. He is truly what you would call a super scientist in the really small stuff in microplastics. He is the CEO and founder of Algenesis Materials. It is trying to solve and create a world without all of those harmful microplastics. He's had a long career as an entrepreneur, starting several businesses. Rincon Pharmaceutical in 2005, Sapphire Energy 2007, Triton Health and Nutrition 2013, and now Algenesis. In addition to that, he's also been an incredibly successful professor and scientist. He is a distinguished professor of biology and was the director of the California Center for Algae Biotech at UC San Diego. And has also worked at Scribbs, which I have always heard is one of the premier oceanographic centers in the world. Stephen Mayfield, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, very good. Thanks for having me.
And all around great guy, too. Let's add that to the bio.
Well, we'll see about that.
Did you want to be an entrepreneur, or did you stumble upon it after you realized that your incredible science background gave you insights into things that could make money?
Yeah, I stumbled onto it. Like I think most people in the world, you know, I had a plan and was following it, and then something else got in the way. And specifically what happened for me was back in 2000, you know, I was working away at Scripps Research Institute doing pretty basic science, kind of gene regulation stuff back then. And, you know, I was getting funded and publishing papers. And I was approached by one of the big pharmaceutical companies because we had produced a protein in algae, a mammalian protein. And they said, hey, if you should make monoclonal antibodies. And we're like, what? Well, okay, why? They said, because they're super expensive. And we think if you make them in algae, we can make them really cheap. We're like, yeah, probably. And they said, well, we're going to give you some money to try. I'm like, oh, great. You know, I was an assistant professor back then. Anytime you're here, somebody's going to give you money, you take it. So we made a monoclonal antibody and worked a human monoclonal antibody, and it worked really well. And we showed that it folded correctly and bound and et cetera. So we published a paper, a very good paper. It was published in a big journal, Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. So we knew we were, you know, that was good. And for whatever reason, the Los Angeles Times saw the paper and called me up. And they said, hey, can we send a photographer down? Yeah, sure. Fine. And we want to ask you some questions. Okay. So came down, took some pictures of us. The next week on the cover of the business section of the LA Times was my face holding a couple of Petri dishes with algae on them and toting this giant breakthrough. And so that was an enormous epiphany for me, because I realized that, oh my God, I'm still doing the same science I was before, but by making a product, people could relate to it and they just like it much better. In fact, my mom called me and said, oh, I finally know what you do after all these years. So that's how I stumbled upon it.
Interesting. And did you make a little money from that? I mean, did you do okay?
Yeah, well, what that's how we started Rincon Pharmaceutical. So we published the paper in 2002, got, like I said, 2003, we got big press on it. And then a bunch of people called us and they said, oh, you should start a company. So we did. Then, like most things, it got derailed. That specific company got derailed, not because the technology wasn't good. It was. And we made several monoclonal antibodies. We had programs with Biogen, IDEC, and Pfizer. All that part worked really well. But the economics of medicine is such that they don't really care about the cost of what's called the cost of goods. Like, they don't really care that you can make a protein 10 times cheaper in your system than they were in CHO cells, because the actual cost of the protein that goes into a drug is maybe 4 or 5%. 95% of it is on advertising, clinical trials, et cetera. And what happened was all the pharma companies are risk averse. So they're like, well, you can make the protein cheaper, but we don't care. So that program sort of faded away. So I never got big bucks on that, but it did give me the bug of understanding, oh, you can do good basic science and publish papers. That doesn't really change the world. What really changes the world is products. And so then, starting in about 2010, 2012, then I got on the march of, okay, what products can we make that the world needs? Because that's really what scientists should be doing.
I love it. I love it. Tell us about Algenesis.
Well, so the way this formed was I started a biofuel company called Sapphire Energy back in 2008, and we raised huge amounts of money, right? Stupid money. And but by 2013, $300 million. Okay. That it was stupid money. And the reason we got all that money as a startup company, not because of me, right? We hired some very sophisticated people. But it was because the biofuels was a complete bubble. And people just, it's kind of like artificial intelligence now, just, oh, this is going to save us. We got to throw money into here. The technology worked great, But what happened was I recognized in 2013, wait, we're never going to make biofuels and algae. And the reason I recognized that was not because we couldn't do it or it was technically tough. It was because fuel is the cheapest commodity on the planet, right? We use a huge amount of it. So it's a big dollar, right? People are always, but it's the only, $7 trillion market. Okay, but it's also pound for pound, super cheap. Like it's less than 50 cents a pound for fuel, like 40 cents a pound even now. So I'm like, why would we spend all this time make totally cool oils in algae and then burn them in our cars? That doesn't make any sense. I'm going to sell them to the highest bidder, not the lowest bidder. So that's when I pivoted and just said, I'm going to start making things from algae other than fuel. And I made food. That started this company, Triton Health and Nutrition, and they got bought by a Chinese company back in 2019. And then we started to make polymers. And the reason we made polymers was because they're 10 times more valuable than fuel. So the simple economics was make something that's 10 times more valuable. If it's the same work to make it, make something that's 10 times more valuable. So that's what we did.
And what does that do? How does that make, is that the thing that eats the microplastics?
No, it's the thing that is the plastic. So what we make, what Algenesis makes, is we make the monomers that go into polyurethanes, right? So what are polyurethanes? Polyurethanes are the bottom of your shoes. They're your shoe soles. They're the car seats in your car and the seat cushion you're sitting on right now. They're tires. They're paints. They're sealants. It's a ubiquitous polymer that is very high value because it has really good properties of both waterproofing and being elastic. It can stretch. Okay. So we picked that specifically. We said, hey, that's a really interesting polymer. We should go after that one. And we specifically picked it because we recognize that it could be made to be biodegradable. And why is biodegradable polymer important? Because we are being killed right now by microplastics. Every single thing.
Floating in the Pacific Ocean, right?
Yes, exactly. But just look around you right now, wherever you are. I don't care where you are. You can be in your car. You can be in your kitchen. You can be at work. Look around you and look how many plastic things are next to you. Every single one of those, including your shoes and your shirt and your hat and everything else, right? Every single one of those is shedding microplastics every day. When I was a kid, when I was born back in the 1950s, plastic didn't exist. There were no plastic anything. And we made things out of wood and glass and metal, right? Through our entire evolution, we never had plastics, except we have the last 50 or 60 years now. And now they are so ubiquitous. So what does that mean? That means we are seeing, as human beings, this product, this microplastic is now in our drinking water, it's in our air, it's in our blood. I just read a report last week that said it's 0.5% of our brain is now plastic, things that we have eaten that absorbed into us. Well, if you've never seen these as an organism before, and all of a sudden they're everywhere, bad things are going to happen. And sure enough, that's what people are starting to report, right? That microplastics are they're going to make cigarettes and, the rest of the smog and the rest of the toxin we've seen will pale in comparison to what microplastics are going to do to us. Okay. So we knew that. We looked at this and we said, hey, plastics are cool things. We like them. They do really great things. We wrap our food in them. We ride surfboards with them. They're our shoes. But we don't want them to have microplastics. Well, if we have a biodegradable plastic, it won't form microplastics. Sure enough, that's what we proved, and that's what we do now. We make polymers. We make plastics that are just as functional as the petroleum ones, but they biodegrade at the end of their life, which means they don't leave microplastics in the environment.
And so who do you then sell that to? The, 3Ms of the world who make plastic injectable molding type things?
We could. Right now, we primarily sell it to the shoe industry. They were the industry that looked at this and said, well, the shoe and the outdoor industry. So we sell it to brands, look at the shoes on your feet. We probably sell them to those guys. We sell our monomers to those factories that make the components that goes into their shoes or that make the components that go into their waterproof coating on their fabric.
All right. But it seems like you would have an infinite possibility list. I mean, you could put this in everything.
Yes. That's one of our problems. That's an opportunity, but it's also a problem because you need to, because it's a startup company, you don't have unlimited resources and bandwidth. So you got to kind of focus. And so there's always this game of you're trying to figure out what industry should use your material, but then you have to go convince that industry that they use your material. But you're also looking for the industries that are forward leaning. Like one of the ones that kind of shocked us was the furniture industry. We now have two programs going with different furniture manufacturers because they came to us last year and they said, hey, our customers are demanding that we have bio-based, biodegradable material in our furniture. They don't want to be sitting on chairs that are shedding microplastics into their house. You got to help us. So we started down that path to work with those guys. And hopefully next year there will be chairs on the market that have our material in them.
I've heard that the butt is particularly susceptible to microplastics.
That might be true. I haven't read that paper yet, but it might be true.
Yeah, I'll publish that. I'm working on that paper right now.
Okay, good.
Uh-huh. And is this company also obscenely funded?
No. We have not been because there hasn't been what happened in 2007 was, right before the economy crashed because of the housing thing, right? But in 2007, people don't remember, the price of gas doubled within a year. Between 2006 and 2007, man, it didn't go up a little bit, it doubled. And then everybody sort of recognized, hey, wait a minute, petroleum's a finite resource, the price of oil is going up, it might go up forever. Plus, oh, you know what? Maybe this climate change things is real. You know, we're done dumping all this CO2 in the atmosphere, and it seems like it's getting hotter every year. So it was the combination of those two things. People recognizing that petroleum was a finite resource, and therefore the price was likely to increase, coupled with the fact that we should be doing something about the environment. So that made this bubble that people just threw stupid money into it. The polymer industry, people haven't recognized yet how bad microplastics are. And they haven't recognized yet that we have a solution, right? But when they do, we think stupid money is going to come in. So we think in the next couple of years, we're hopeful that stupid money is going to start to come into this. But it won't, but I say stupid money, but that's not really true. What it should be is we should have an urgency to solve these problems. The data's right in front of us.
Well, every, the president I guarantee you, should mandate that there will be no more non-algae-based plastics after 2030, and you should then be a trillionaire, and it should go everywhere.
Yeah, so here's why that hasn't happened yet. When we talk to people who write, and we do talk to senators and congressmen, and they recognize this as a problem, they cannot pass a law, and they won't pass a law that bans something that there isn't already a replacement for it. So it's our job right now to scale up our material and get into as many products as we can so that people can see, oh, that is a viable solution. We actually can make polymers and we can make plastics that are just as functional that don't leave persistent microplastics. Oh, now that I know we can do this, now I can pass a law telling all you consumers that you have to do this. Okay? But we're not there yet. We haven't, and other groups haven't made enough biopolymers yet to prove that we can replace all the plastics that are out there. Because if we banned plastics today, oh, your life would be pretty ugly next week. No more Starbucks to-go cups.
I'm fine
no more
with
food
that. That's
packaging
fine.
In the market.
You can have Starbucks.
Yeah. Okay, but no more any to-go containers, right? Those are all made from with plastics that form microplastics. So it's a path that we have to go down. It's a process we have to go through. Fortunately for us and the world, we do have high-performance polymers now that can replace the existing plastics that are out there and not form these toxins.
Steve, part of my philosophy and a thesis of mine that I'm working on right now is that I'm not worried about the environment. I'm just not. I think that you and 38 other guys like you are going to solve it. And like all the other problems we've had, you know, the plague and all, just every, and wheat not growing tall enough, and you know, all is going to be solved. And I'm not worried about it because, and you're the best example I've seen, that you're going to get rich doing it. And that a lot of people, a lot of academics who are maybe doing some interesting stuff are poorly focusing their time, and instead of as you are creating alternative new solutions, they're arguing whether the hockey stick is true or not, you know. And it doesn't matter if it's true or not, we need solutions. And well, there's my thought. What are your thoughts on this?
So you have kind of the rosy view of it. Let me give you the other side of the coin. The other side of the coin is, when I was a kid growing up, we knew the air pollution in Los Angeles was horrendous. All you had to do when I was 7 years old is, you know, walk outside at lunchtime and take a breath and start coughing, and you knew how bad it was. We knew then, that was 1965, we knew then how to solve that problem, right? We knew that we could put restrictors on cars that would reduce the pollution. Why didn't we do it? We didn't do it because there was a huge number of people making a huge amount of money selling those existing cars and the gasoline that went into them. And they're like, hey, wait a minute. I'm not giving up my livelihood for, you know, and let those other people take that money away from me. So they fought it tooth and nail, right? They made up stuff. They put ads out. They did everything they could. Fortunately, in California, people said, nope, this is so bad, we're changing our ways. And we passed laws, changed all the cars in California. Yes, it cost us a little more, not a lot, nothing compared to the health advantages we got from it. And within 10 years' time, the air in California was suddenly breathable again. And then what happened? That translated to the rest of the world. Plastics are the same thing. Yes, we have the solutions. Yes, they're ready to go right now. Oh my God, do you think the existing plastic companies are going to let that happen? No how, no way. Every day I read some story where they make up stuff about how bad I am. Maybe not me personally, but just how bad bioplastics. Oh, they're bad for the environment. They're bad. What they're really saying is they're bad for my economics, for your solution to be successful. Now, they can't fight it forever, and eventually I will win, and bioplastics will win. But if people like you don't at least cause a little bit of a ruckus and tell those existing guys to knock it off and let the good solutions win, then it's going to take 20 years for this to happen instead of five.
Well, you know, I'm going to make as much noise as I can, and that's, you know, as I said, I have a thesis, and that implies that I'm writing it down, and I am. I'm, you know, going to write a book about it and make as much noise as I can, because I do believe that you're going to solve the world. But that also takes me back to my, maybe third or fourth question, who you're selling it to, 3M, yeah. I asked. Yeah. Why don't you go to the evil plastic companies? Why wouldn't they prefer to source through a technology like you that allows them to say, you know, us evil chemical company went out and found a solution, and now our plastics are safer, and therefore you should buy our stock?
They will. That's exactly what they will do. They're just not going to do it right now. And the reason they're not going to do it right now is because they sell, and this is a real number, they sell 100 million pounds of petroleum plastics this year. Can I make 100 million pounds? No. I have no ability to do that. I can make 100,000, but I can't even make 1 million yet. It's going to take me next year, the year after, before I get to 1 million pounds. And it's going to take me 5 years before I get to 10 million pounds. Now, when I get to 10 million pounds, that'll be a big enough number. One of those guys will come in and buy me. That's what's going to happen. They're going to let me and all the other startup companies that are out there working on biopolymers, they're going to let one of us fight with each other until one of us wins. Then they're going to come in with their big bucks and buy it. But right now, they are making way too much money on their existing technology. They're not going to go take the chance. What if I'm wrong, right? What if, you know, my bio-based, biodegradable plastics don't really solve the problem? I have to prove it first. And I have to prove that at a scale big enough that it is just really obvious to these guys. Not, oh, that looks good on paper. This has to look good on my spreadsheet.
Are there brands in the shoe space that we can support now that support you?
Yeah, they're primarily small brands. Right. There's a bunch of little brands that have run to us. Right. They come to us and they're like, hey, who? I don't make.
Let's pitch. Let's promote some of them and give them some love.
Can I tell you any of these? I'm trying to think. Most of them don't want us to say yet because they want to have the big splash.
I get it.
When they launch it. Right. They're like, hey, we want to launch this thing. There's one local company here in San Diego that we hope to launch something with in the spring of next year. I'd love to tell you what their name is, because when they launch, I think you'll see that not only is it a cool, really cool shoe we're making with them, but their heart's in the right place. Like, they're trying to do the right thing. But no, how can I tell you who they are right now? They want to have that big splash when they come onto the market. But what I can tell you is all of the big brands are looking at us. Right. We do not have a program with these brands, but I'm just going to mention them because you guys all know them. Nike, Adidas, Pumas, on all of the big brands that you recognize out there, all of them are talking to us. Right. But they're also being kind of cautious. They're like, well, we think this is totally cool. Like, you sent us some sample material and it looks really good. And we're going to make some test shoes. We're actually making test shoes with a lot of those groups right now. But we won't launch anything big till we have really proven to ourselves we've done all of the testing on them, primarily the testing with consumers, by the way. Like, we pass the material specification. It takes them about 2 months to know that that's true or not. So they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, your material is great. It makes super superior shoes. We're good on that front. Now we have to find out if consumers really want this or not. And that's a little slower process. That takes up to a year for them to convince themselves. So that's the process we're in right now. So I think what you'll see is next year, a bunch of shoes come out. But I will tell you this, we made to speed this up, when we were talking to the brands a couple of years ago, we're like, what do you mean 4 or 5 years? We're not going to, no, we went and made our own shoes. And you can buy our shoes right now. It's called Blueview, blueviewfootwear.com. And if your listeners want to do something, go onto our website. Shoes are on sale right now. They're only $60. Super comfortable sneakers. Go buy a pair of those. If we sell enough of those, then I guarantee you the big brands will take note.
That is a cool twist I didn't know about. I'm typing in the URL right now. Blueviewfootwear.com.
Yep. Totally. And you'll see they're super comfortable sneakers. Everybody loves them. Everybody who buys them and wears them is like, I can't believe how great your shoes are. They're super comfortable. They're lightweight. They're airy. They're all the good things that a sneaker should be. And we've sold, I think, 4,000 or 5,000 of these things now. So it's not like we haven't sold any of them, but we need to sell tens of thousands. Then the big brands will be like, oh, maybe you guys are onto something. Maybe the consumers do want this.
Very cool. Dr. Stephen Mayfield, how do we find out more, follow online, and continue to watch your journey?
Well, I tell you what. So our material is called Soleic, S-O-L-E-I-C. And what that means is sun is soul, and oleic is oil, sun oil. So Soleic Materials, you can either look up soleicmaterial.com, or you will start to see this showing up on products sometime next year, like early spring of next year, and for sure by the summer of next year, you will see many products made with this. But jump onto our website, follow us. There's a little button there. You can link up with us, and we'll send you newsletters on our journey and how we're selling the stuff. And then start to tell the brand. People don't understand how much power they have. Look, people ask me all the time, what can I do about this? Okay, I bought a pair of your shoes. What else can I do? Tell your favorite brands that they need to get sustainable, biodegradable polymers in their products. Go onto their Facebook page. Go onto their webpage. Tell them that's what you want. If enough consumers tell the big brands, if enough consumers tell Nike, this is what I want, then that's what Nike's going to make, right? They follow the consumers.
I can't wait to see how it plays out. And congratulations, Stephen. Thanks for being with us. Great story.
Jim, thanks for having me. Keep up the good work.
And we will be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one. You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back in again. Thank you so very much for being with us. We are joined again by our favorite environmental entrepreneur. Please welcome Wayne Elliott to the show. He has built several incredible businesses in the recycling space, recycling ships and alkaline batteries, and has made impacts in those that no other companies have done. He was the first ISO certified ship recycling business in the world and has made more impact in alkaline recycling than anyone else. Wayne, welcome back. How are you doing today?
Just fine. Thanks, Jim. How are you?
I am well. In addition to all of that, you're also a principal at Strauss Naturals. We've been talking about some of the incredible health benefits that the company has, and we've been talking about kidneys and hearts, and I realize I haven't asked you about, I think, what a lot of people are suffering from, just pure pain. We have this horrible OxyContin epidemic in America. So many people addicted to the OxyContin for pain relief. What is the Strauss recommendation for pain relief, please?
Well, the only thing I've used in the past 30 years is white willow bark. And yes, that's the bark off white willow trees. And it is what's in aspirin, for example, for pain. I don't know why the other chemicals are added that can harm your stomach. White willow bark does not harm your stomach. It's very easy on your stomach. Now, it's not like morphine, Jim, where it knocks you out so you don't feel any pain. Of course, it isn't. But I broke my arm, my left arm, between the wrist and the elbow. Both bones right through I broke. That's 20 years ago when I was 50. And the only thing I took for pain was white willow bark. And I took another natural formula, which actually mended the bones. I didn't have the surgery, which I didn't want. And the surgeon, who thought I was nuts, said, "Well, either way, you're going to have arthritis there." I said, "Well, if it's either way, Doc, I got nothing to lose." Now, here we are 20 years later. I don't have arthritis in that arm. And didn't get caught. No steel parts put in me. So anyway, what I like to use is white willow bark. I found it very fast acting for headaches. Or I sometimes would work all night at the office. Usually Friday nights was my night to work all day and work through the night. And sometimes get a headache. Yeah, and of course, the other things that are good, when I would do that, I would sometimes put take a dish towel, not a cloth, and wet it, put it in the shape of a horseshoe, and keep it in the freezer so that it was cold. And then I would put it around my neck. And when it thawed out after 10 or 15 minutes, put it back in the freezer. So ice is very effective. I think most sports doctors, if they only had one tool, it would probably be ice. Swelling is where the pain really comes in. If you can keep swelling down, your pain is less. So I use everything but man-made chemical formulas, Jim, ice. You know, elevate your leg. If here's your leg or your foot, you elevate it. Again, to try and keep the swelling down. And I use white willow bark. You can buy it in health stores. Strauss doesn't make it anymore. They used to. But just white willow bark. You can buy it anywhere. Very effective and easy on your stomach. Won't hurt you.
And will that help with inflammation as well?
It can, but the thing, of course, for inflammation, the best thing, in my opinion, is turmeric curcumin. And they have a couple of very good brands of, you can get double strength, and it's just a natural herb. Again, cannot hurt you. And I found that that effective for inflammation. Inflammation is a real dangerous thing, really, to our bodies. One of the causes, other than injury, excuse me, clearing my throat this morning, one of the causes other than an actual injury can be our diet, too many acidic foods. And if people are wondering about the foods, you can just Google acid ash foods and alkaline ash foods. We're really meant to be slightly on the alkaline side with our body pH. Things like nasty things like cancer need an acidic environment to grow. In an alkaline environment, it'd be like trying to grow tomatoes in your asphalt driveway. So we never want to be too acidic. And that's largely can be controlled by what we're eating. You know, refined sugar is bad. Shellfish, very high in both cholesterol and acid. Shellfish, yes.
No.
Shellfish, as the Bible tells us, is not a good thing at all to eat. I know people love it. Shrimp, lobster, crab. Terrible for us, really.
What does the Bible say about shellfish?
About not eating crustaceans.
Really?
Crustaceans are clove-hooved animals, so like pigs and goats.
Well, why did God put him here then?
I don't know. Must have been for some other creatures to eat. I don't know. You know, the coyotes and the lions and tigers, I guess they have to have something to eat too.
Damn it,
but
Wayne,
some of the tastiest things,
of
course, as always.
My favorite.
Some of the tastiest things aren't good for us.
Ugh.
What is that, right?
Yes. And then the best thing you can do to a shrimp is wrap it in bacon. And now I'm double bad. I've got two.
That's
on the
right. Well, when I was a young person, I don't think I've told you this before. Excuse me. I think I was 19 or 20 years old. I got a job in Tampico, Mexico. That's 5 hours from Brownsville, Texas, straight south. They had two ships sunk in the harbor in Tampico. And there was no refrigeration in Tampico in those days. And it was terrible, really. So what I ate, I would go down to the dock. I had an electric fry pan I bought. I would go down to the dock and buy shrimp, which I never really liked in the first place, honestly. I sure don't like them now. And I would cook shrimp in the room, and I ate oranges because you could peel them and not get tangled up with bad water. And that's basically what I ate. I got sick anyway and slept in an easy chair for, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks, and was never so glad to get out of a place in my life. To tell you the truth, I one day, in front of my motel, a cow got killed by a bus. 5 days later, some fellows came along and cut it up and took it to the market. So it was, so I ate some shrimp, all right, but I never did really like them, and now I just don't eat them. I don't like them at all. But any crustaceans, the shellfish, very high in acidic acid, very high in cholesterol, the highest.
All right. What should we be eating then? What's the, if I can't eat shrimp anymore, what should I replace it with? What's a good alkaline food group?
Well, I think it depends a lot. I've come to believe that our blood type is important with respect to what we eat, Jim. And there are several books. The one that I read, and I've bought, I probably bought 50 copies and given them away, is by Dr. J. Adamo, A-D-A-M-O. I don't know him, but he wrote the book that I read. And it's called Eat Right for Your Blood Type. And so we're all different to start with. We're like snowflakes. We're all different. And, you know, I had to, like everything, I have to get my head around it and understand it before I'll subscribe to it. So I was thinking, you know, how does this make sense? We're all humans. We do have different diets, you know, oftentimes depending on where we originate from. And then I thought of the bears. Polar bears, grizzly bears, black bears, red bears, brown bears. Some of them are carnivores and some of them are not. They're all bears, but they have different diets. And so that kind of helped me to buy into this, if you will. For example, my blood type is O. That's the original blood type. They say that's the strongest blood type. And with babies and young children, if they can use, actually everybody can use blood type O, regardless of your blood type.
Universal donor,
and
right?
Oftentimes they'll give, pardon?
It's called the universal donor, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. So, and oftentimes they'll give young children, if they need transfusion, they'll give them O on purpose. But blood type O are the only people that should eat beef. We're the only blood type that have an acidic enough digestive system to handle beef. You know, but it's a very interesting book, and it will tell you things about your personality that you'll probably guess what blood type you are by the time you've read it. I confirmed mine years ago giving blood in Florida, actually. And when they called, leave a message for you. Is actually how I found out my blood type. Hardly anyone I've ever talked to knows their blood type. In Canada, Ontario now, it costs $48 or $50 to get a test. Even our doctors don't know. You'd think it'd be part of your medical file, but it isn't here. And but I do think it's important because in addition to the description of our personalities and such, they will give three lists for each blood type. Highly beneficial foods that are like medicine to us, neutral, just nutritious foods, and foods to avoid. So, you know, I was most interested in the highly beneficial and the foods to avoid. The book refers to it like poison to us. And I first trialed this with my mother, I don't know, 20-odd years ago. And so I took, say, that can be disappointing, Jim. My favorite spice is black and white pepper. Not supposed to have that. My favorite vegetable is cucumber. I'm not supposed to have that. My favorite nut is cashews. I'm not supposed to have them. My highly beneficial nuts are walnuts and pumpkin seeds. I love them both, but cashews were my favorite. So anyway, when I first read this book, my mother and I tried it, and I really wanted to know. So I cut out pepper first. I used to use a lot of pepper. I would, you know, blanket some foods in pepper. I just love it. And when I stopped eating it, my gas went down by 80%. I thought, wow, there's something to this. I still eat some cucumber. I don't have five or six of them for lunch anymore, like I used to do sometimes. It was my favorite vegetable since I was a toddler. So I do eat it if it's in a salad. I just don't pig out on them anymore. And, you know, what really surprised me was for type O, cauliflower and Brussels sprouts, neither which I've ever really cared for, will make me fat eating those two vegetables. So, you know, it's very interesting. You wouldn't think Brussels sprouts could make anyone gain weight, but it's the whole blood type thing. So in some respects, it worked out for me, where the likes of cauliflower and Brussels sprouts, I said, well, good, I never liked them anyway, so I won't eat those again. But I really come to believe in that. I think it's also a way that we control our weight a little better, a little easier, is by eating according to our, or at least mindful of our blood type. You know, it gives you a bit of a conscience. And when it comes to things like shellfish, you know, Jim, it's kind of like milkshakes, in my opinion. They should be a very occasional treat, not a mainstay. We've talked about my love of milk and milkshakes when I was younger that clogged my arteries and almost killed me. But nobody should eat those kind of quantities anyway. So, you know, moderation is the key with many things. But just interesting if that book, Eat Right for Your Blood Type, and also paying attention to some alkaline ash foods and acid ash foods, it'll surprise you because there's fruits and vegetables on both lists. So it just not only give you a bit of a conscience about it, but knowing the difference, you know, can help you make better choices and decide, well, you know, that's not good for you, I'm not going to have that, and just choose something better. I mean, our health is our wealth, and so we really should be conscious of these kinds of things.
Well, I'm on Amazon right now, and for those listeners at home who didn't catch it, the author's name is Peter D'Adamo, D-A, in both capitalized, D-apostrophe A, D-A-M-O. And just for your reference, the book has some 9,500 reviews, which would put it in the top 0.1% of all nonfiction books. So it's been very, very well received by other people other than Wayne. And there are several auxiliary books that he's also written. He has a book for each blood type. If you're blood type O, he has a book for you as well, for each blood type with more detail. And those have also sold tremendously well and been reviewed very well. So Wayne, great recommendation, and I've already bought it. So we will send Peter some more money. Excellent. All right.
Well, I helped that list. I must have bought 50 so far, and I don't have one for myself now. Again, I'll have to get one. But
well, you should write Peter and introduce yourself.
Yeah, this information is important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So right now,
it's important information, I think.
Yes, I'm learning a lot. I had never heard about this. I'm going to read the book over the weekend. So you're on the road right now going to various health food companies around Canada and just trying to help get Strauss products out there. What are you seeing as you're visiting these hundreds of stores? Are they doing well? Or is the economy looking good from the supplement industry? What sense are you getting talking to all of these hundreds of retailers? Are they still being destroyed by Amazon? Are they bouncing back? What are you discovering out there?
Well, things have certainly changed. And for the most part, the store owners and managers feel as though they've changed for good. There'll be no turning back from this Amazon order online business and Amazon and others delivered to your door and so forth. So, yes, they've all suffered. Started with COVID, inflation didn't help, but they're great people, and I'd say about 10% of stores so far have closed. But you meet the nicest people in these health stores, so it's been quite a pleasure in the first 100 or so. But we're now headed straight to the West Coast to the Strauss office, and then we're going to work our way back across Canada with about 500 stops. So. It's always a good experience because the people are so nice and caring, and they've been very welcoming to us. So it's a very pleasant, a lot of driving, but a very pleasant trip.
And so the retailers are optimistic then? Would you say that?
I'm sorry, what was that, Jim?
Are the retailers optimistic?
I think they are. They do believe the heyday, so to speak, if there ever was a heyday, but the heyday is over and things are just a little tougher now, and sales a little less. There are some stores that have done great, and of course, if there were two in a city or a town and one closed, that's helped the other one with additional business. So it's kind of survival of the fittest out there right now. But I would say overall they're determined people. For the most part, they're not in it for the money. They just love what they do. And they continue to have to put up with the government and big pharma, all the pressure on natural. It's a real oxymoron, Jim, the pressure on natural things.
What do you mean?
I think it's, natural's good. That's what the creator put here. He didn't put man-made chemical drugs, and when he created us, there were no man-made chemical drugs. So some people look at it as an improvement. I see it as a disaster. I do believe man-made chemical drugs are the leading cause of death now, doctor-prescribed drugs. And many in the natural health industry believe that. The numbers are astounding, and they do, in their defense, they do tell you. They tell you all the things, harmful things that can happen to you, including death. So in their defense, they do that, but it's the only thing that doctors and nurses can talk about. The College of Physicians and Surgeons prohibits them from talking about alternative or natural medicine, which, again, another oxymoron. It's the only thing the Creator put here to help us. Another reference in the Bible. our foods are our medicines, and I'll always believe that. I'll never take so much as an over-the-counter pain reliever as long as I live, so help me God. Never. Not ever once. Not to mention some of the horrid drugs like the statin drugs and that govern down your liver. There's none of our organs are meant to be governed down. We're not diesel engines. We're humans. So I have great angst against them. I see what happens to so many people. Some people end up on 15, 18, 12 drugs when they're never tested together, Jim. The trials have to be with clean bodies. You can't be on any drugs. And they never test any two together. It's never been done. Never will be done. They don't want to know the news. And yet people are... My best friend was on 16 when he moved into my house at 400 pounds. A year and a half later, he moved out at 240 pounds and no pharmaceuticals. That's the stories I like.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Well, Wayne,
that's what I do. I mean, that's my juice now. That's my motivation, Jim, is to helping people safely. You know, there's no danger with natural things. You cannot kill yourself eating apples or asparagus. You can't overdose. It's the same with our herbal formulas. You cannot hurt yourself.
All right. Wayne, I know you need to get on the road. Thank you for your time today, and we'll talk to you next week. Be safe.
Thanks, Jim. Same to you. All the best. Bye.
We are out of time, but back tomorrow. Be safe, everyone. Take care. Bye now.